Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Hey, you. Yeah, you in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. I'm Macca, and here's Tass.
Thank you, Macca. Macca, I'm absolutely delighted this morning to be able to let you know that we are going to be speaking with one of my favourites, in fact, our favourites, let's be honest about it. We're both fanboys.
Fanboys.
The wonderful Michelle Grattan. Michelle Grattan, of course, is one of Australia's most respected political journalists. She's been a member of the Canberra Parliamentary Press Gallery for over 40 years and certainly has been part of my entire life, really. Good morning to you, Michelle. It's great to have you on the airwaves this morning.
Hi, good to be with you.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Michelle, it's Macca here. I'm a subject that's been of top of mind for me and I think a lot of our listeners, people around Australia, but particularly the federal government's response to China and Taiwan, and particularly with the visit most recently of former Prime Minister Tony Abbott. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, in general terms, of course, we've seen over the recent period Australia toughen its position on China. China's been, in its turn, very harsh on Australia. We've had action against our trade with China and, of course, rhetorical attacks. Australia is a supporter of Taiwan, although it doesn't recognise it as such. But I think it is also very aware that the tension over Taiwan is just escalating and is part of part of China's increasing assertiveness. And there's great uncertainty about where this will end. China is determined to eventually reincorporate Taiwan, and that, of course, could lead to conflict with the United States, which could involve Australia. So it's a very difficult and delicate situation in the short term, but more in the medium term. And it is part of this general increasing threat that the Australian government sees from China. And it also sees the need to respond to that threat. And of course, the AUKUS deal was part of that. Now, in terms of Tony Abbott's visit,
I was just going to ask you about that.
Which has been very high profile. Scott Morrison's made it clear that Tony Abbott is not any sort of envoy for the government. The Prime Minister said he hadn't spoken to Tony Abbott before the visit, and it was in a purely private capacity. But Tony Abbott always attracts a good deal of publicity, and he has done so on this occasion and very much identified with Taiwan's cause and emphasised the link with Australia.
Do you think he's winning many friends for Australia by doing this?
Well, I think he would be in Taiwan, but whether the government really would want this publicity around him at this time, I think is a moot point.
Perhaps the Taiwanese might remind Tony Abbott that he signed the free trade agreement with China.
Well, that's right. I suppose the counter to that was, of course, relations with China were so different, and that was only a few years ago. Mm. So it is a bit of a mark of how things have changed in the Australia-China relationship, and of course how China has toughened its position in those years, which has led to this deterioration in our relationship. Now, critics would say that Australia hasn't necessarily handled that relationship as well as it should have, but I think that the driving force of the deterioration has clearly been the hardening of the Chinese regime in the last few years.
Now, Michelle, I'd like to change the topic, if I may. As you know, we are Australia's only LGBTIQ plus radio station, community-owned and operated radio station. And, of course, we're very interested in the sorts of things that occasionally our federal government dabbles in. And I'm going to loosely define these as culture wars. What do you think all that's about? Why is this federal government constantly infatuated with dipping in and out of culture wars and occasionally dragging our communities into this as well?
Culture wars, I think, have been part of the political scene now for quite a while. We had John Howard, for example, was very strongly against what he called the black armband Yes. theory and way of looking at history. I think that this is obviously related to the growth of identity politics too in recent decades, and also to the increasing polarisation that you've seen in politics and in the media over the immediate past period, and that's that's been a negative, I think, for our political debate, that people have become less tolerant of others' views. And, of course, social media has been a big contributor to that, where people can say anything, often anonymously, and there are few checks. Although it's quite interesting that now we're seeing increasing calls for checks on the big tech platforms, and we'll see where all that goes. I guess to some extent the COVID crisis has perhaps suppressed the culture wars to a degree, certainly not entirely. They do rage on like a somewhat out of control bushfire, but nevertheless I think that because COVID has been such a preoccupation of communities and governments, and has extracted such a price in terms of restrictions and changes to the way that so many people have had to live their lives, that the culture wars have been a bit pushed into the background.
We are, of course, expecting Attorney General Cash to deliver a new religious freedoms or religious discriminations bill at some point. So they have. This is something that was promised a long time ago. We're still waiting to see it. We're not really sure what it's going to say, and except that we expect that it will be some sort of an attack on our communities.
Well, we do have to see what that legislation says. I think it's interesting that if Christian Porter had remained Attorney General, we mightn't have seen that legislation. Can't be sure about that, but my impression was that when it was all delayed because of COVID, there was a feeling that if it never resurfaced, well, no tears would be shed. But then there was pressure to bring it back, and it's supposed to be coming back. But look, I would have thought the chances of that coming to any sort of resolution before the election would have to be fairly limited, because we might have a March election. We know the election will be next year, not this year, but it's sort of around March or May at the latest. And I would have thought that if Christmas is looking quite good and everybody's in a reasonable mood through the summer holidays, that the Prime Minister would be inclined to take the March option, no certainty yet. But if that happens, I don't think that we would see much finality on the religious freedom legislation. And also, of course, the integrity legislation,
oh, yes,
which is pretty important for the government in an electoral sense. Now, that too is supposed to be coming soon, and I think the government will introduce that before Christmas, but it doesn't leave much time to deal with it.
No, not at all.
And it's interesting, Michelle, a number of the crossbenchers, particularly in the Senate, have said about that legislation, or that, you know, the anti-corruption proposals, that the government doesn't seem to actually want to negotiate on it because they actually don't care whether the bill's passed or not.
Mm. Well, I think they would rather not have an integrity commission,
yes,
but they were pushed to promise one. And, of course, we're now going to see a number of independents in Liberal-held seats who, while they're preoccupied with climate change, also will be campaigning on integrity issues. So it is pretty important. It will be a contested piece of legislation. Labor will say it's too mild, that the body doesn't have enough teeth. Now, we haven't seen the final blueprint yet.
No.
We've only seen the model, and there have been consultations, but it won't be too strong. The Prime Minister made it clear this week in the wake of the Berejiklian resignation that he didn't favour an ICAC model, so we won't be seeing that. And I think that it will come under a good deal of criticism. For example, a public integrity body this week, a think tank which has got a number of eminent former legal eagles on it, was very critical of the model. So there's a big debate on this to come.
One final thing, Michelle, because we're nearly out of time. Two-part question. Do you think the Prime Minister will go to Glasgow? I mean, he's probably no family relatives he needs to visit there, but do you think he's going to go to Glasgow to the climate summit?
He says he hasn't made a decision. And it's always risky to predict, so don't hold me to the prediction. But it does seem to me that all the signs are that he doesn't want to go to Glasgow, or for that matter to the G20, which is linked in the same trip. I think he probably feels he doesn't need to go to the G20 after having been at that G7 meeting and then the Washington trip. And in terms of Glasgow, well, there's not much of an upside for him. He will announce a climate package in the next few weeks, but he, as he said himself, it's more important to do that in Australia, to bed that down in Australia rather than for the international audience. So I think he will feel that it's not got enough pluses for him to go, and then he has to quarantine, takes time away from here. And as I've said, we are getting closer and closer to that election, and there's a lot of work that he has to do between now and the end of the year. Now, he will be criticised if he doesn't go, obviously, but I think that the more important issue will be the content of that climate package.
So do you have any insights into that package at all, Michelle?
Right. He's desperately trying to get to net zero 2050, that target. He wants to be able to say cleanly, we agree with that target. I think he also wants some medium-term target so that he can say that Australia is stepping up its ambition, although he will be very strongly defensive of what it's already doing. Now, whether he can get this through the Nats is still a question. I think he will. I think Barnaby Joyce wants to come to a deal. So the package will include a lot for the Nats, but If a deal is done with Barnaby Joyce, which is more likely than not, then I still think that there'll be a number of Nationals who'll be very against it and very outspoken. And, of course, Matt Canavan is the most obvious one.
Yeah. Michelle, unfortunately, we're out of time. It's been a great pleasure, and seriously, we Tass and I have followed you for...
All of our adult lives,
and we love your writing. We love, you know, your work. So thank you for giving us some of your time today and some insight. We really appreciate it, and I know our listeners will too.
A pleasure to chat. All the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Michelle Grattan, the political correspondent for The Conversation.
Yes, and
a professorial fellow with the Canberra University.
Yes, and want to put on record our thanks to Misha Ketchell at The Conversation for assisting us in getting Michelle on.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.